Hi, I'm Ian McAllister, and I got off scot-free no matter what Jamie might say.
I'm Jamie Adams, and I'm keeping an eye on Ian this week.
I'm Sam Maggs, and they're both lying. It was all just the magic of editing. No one's on the run from the cops. And this is Brainwaves, bringing you the best in tabletop gaming news. And the headlines for week beginning Sunday, the 8th of July. Games Workshop announces Kill Team and release Age of Sigmar 2nd Edition. Another Kickstarter gets SLA'd. And Fantasy Flight Games announces their first product for their Lord of the Rings LCG, DCG, who knows what it's going to be. This and more on Brainwaves.
Games Workshop has just announced that they will be reissuing their skirmish-based wargame Kill Team later this year. The last time it was reissued was 2016, and as before, it'll be 5 to 10 models per warband battling it out on the war-torn battlefields of the Warhammer 40,000 universe. It seems that they brought in the designers of the incredibly popular Shadespire.
It is very good.
Yeah, apparently. Rework the game, and they've announced there will be two starter sets coming out, which will be Space Wolves and Orcs, and the rulebook when it launches will have rules for 16 factions to play with. Now, my thing, that's interesting. I've always found the smaller skirmish level play slightly more interesting than the huge army faction play. Then again, I don't have a lot of money.
Same. But no, I like small skirmish games. They're really good. I'm surprised that one of those starter sets isn't their new Primaris poster boys.
I believe the Space Wolves are Primaris.
Okay. Well, that's cool, though. I quite like those figures, and I like the Space Wolves, so we'll see what they're like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all up for a little skirmish game like that. Seems quite good.
It's also interesting just seeing what Games Workshop has been doing the past couple of years with skirmish-based war games. In the past two or three years, we have had Kill Team, as I said, in 2016. We've had Shadow War Armageddon in early 2017. We've had Necromunda, obviously hugely reissued in 2017 as well. Now we have Kill Team again, and you kind of wonder, well, what's Games Workshop doing? Why does it keep throwing things at the wall and stuff?
They're one of the only companies left that's really running mainly on large scale combat.
Completely.
Where, some of the other most popular selling miniature games, you've got Infinity, you have got Star Wars X-Wing.
War Machine is quite small scale as well.
Absolutely. And I think people want no fuss, get it to the table quickly, finish relatively quickly as well, skirmish combat.
I think also, it's as the usual marketing things of, it's a new line of miniatures, so we'll get them in a game, which they've done with the Death Watch Overkill, they're going to do with the Rogue Trader game announced very soon, and the Horus Heresy miniatures
completely.
The games,
and always...
Burning a Crossbow and Betrayal at Kalth. But also, I think it's a low price gateway into 40k. You start with a small team, and then if you like that, you like controlling 10 guys, control 50 guys.
Yeah, they did it for Age of Sigmar, maybe early last year, maybe a bit before then, where they just bought out a £6 skirmish rulebook and a load of warbands. I think the warbands cost about £20 to £30, which isn't bad for about 10 models from GW. That sounds crazy saying that, but anyway. But it was an easy buy into that game. Then you could scale up from there.
Yeah, I just feel it's a little bit they're still throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks. I mean, they're not done with the first full wave of Necromunda yet. And they're, like Jamie says, they were releasing Rogue Trader later in the year, which is yet another skirmish 40k game, and it just feels like they're trying to find something that they can build on. I'm hoping this will be it, because like the Shadespire I'm really impressed by, so they've got those designers on board. That sounds really good. We'll see what comes of it.
And we also got the release now, so we had the announcement of Age of Sigmar 2nd Edition back at Warhammer Fest a couple months back, and now it's all finally been released with a glamorous corset, if you want to call it that, called Age of Sigmar Soul Wars. In there you get two kind of half armies, I'd say, maybe half to two-thirds of an army. You get 33 Nighthawk miniatures, which are nice spooky ghosts, and you get 19 Stormcast Eternal miniatures. Also, interestingly, everything's push fit in this corset, which is brilliant. The Shadespire miniatures were fantastic.
Yeah.
And yeah, everything being pushed for it is a really impressive leap forwards.
Yeah, so Slee, there was a Slee Industries miniatures game on Kickstarter last year, and it has recently posted an announcement to its backers that it has all fallen apart. It has been Slayed itself. It was originally licensed by Daruma Productions to produce a miniatures game based in the Slee universe, which is a role-playing game universe from many, many years ago, which is still very popular. And now Nightfall, who own the original rights to Slee, are working with Wordforge Games to try and get any of the miniatures that have been produced during that campaign to the backers. It's all a little bit confusing about exactly what's happening right now and exactly what will get to backers over time. The original campaign took $46,000. How much Daruma basically have said that there is no more money left. They are out of cash, so anything that comes to backers will now be on the back of Nightfall and Wordforge stepping in and delivering stuff to backers. Wordforge have said they do have some of the miniatures in their warehouses, so hopefully they'll see some of the backers will see some stuff. But it's just another warning that Kickstarter is not a shop, no matter what Monolith and Kickstarter might say in the future. But yeah, be aware that these things happen. Kickstarters do fall through.
I think, you know, the previous, four podcasts now, we've been speaking about these Kickstarter warnings and things going wrong and legal battles over Kickstarter, and it's getting worryingly frequent in the industry.
I mean, I don't know how frequent it is, because we hear about these things because it's easy to hear about the bad stuff. And there's a lot of Kickstarters that get successfully funded every week. Like, I've had four or five in the last month, for instance. Yeah. They're all funded. Now, whether I get that stuff or not, that's another matter. But I hope I will, because they're from trusted sources, basically.
That's good. Well, you know, as we've said before, it's growing as a platform. It's growing as a medium of getting just things now and getting games, you know, say 8 months down the line or whatever, but you're still back into it now. It needs to develop. It needs to have these stumbling blocks. It's been phenomenally successful. Now it needs to tail off and work out the kinks that have come from, let's say, the first season, let's say, of major Kickstarter successes.
I've been keeping an eye on a company called Colossal Games, formed towards the start of the year. Their first Kickstarter was called Western Legends, and they've since had almost one Kickstarter every couple of months, if not more frequent than that. Some of the Kickstarters they've had have been tagged as powered by Colossal, which is like the Combo Fighter one is right now. Whether that means they're just fulfilling rather than they're part of the production, I don't know. But yet they just seem to be putting out a lot of games through Kickstarter, and I'd just be a little concerned about how many games they're putting out and whether they can fulfill that, because nothing's been delivered yet. The first one's not due for delivery until September, October this year, I think.
And our final headliner this week. Late last year, Fantasy Flight Games announced the digital version, their first digital game, of The Lord of the Rings, the card game. This is their living card game that's been going for many years now. They're bringing it over to the PC. And now they're gearing up for release with their first product for the game, which seems a bit strange. They've announced a limited collector's edition, which kind of gives you a bundle of all sorts of things. So I'll just go down the list. So it gives you, straight off the top, early access to the Lord of the Rings Living Card Game. Now, the Lord of the Rings Living Card Game is the digital version, not to be confused with Lord of the Rings The Card Game, the physical version. And that gives you early access on August the 28th, so just after Gen Con, at the end of August, you'll get early access to that game. It also gives you a Lord of the Rings The Card Game 2-player limited edition starter set, which contains alternate art, alternate layout for pre-existing cards, and also 2 pre-made player decks. 4 art prints depicting 4 heroes of Lord of the Rings. You get Frodo, Gimli, Arwen, and Aragorn. The game's MP3 soundtrack. A custom collector's edition playmat, which does look quite nice, of Middle-earth. All in-game, now this is the digital, all digital in-game founders packs automatically unlocked. No real word as to what they contain yet. Various in-game cosmetics, and perhaps weirdly of all, a special replica of the One Ring. Now, that all retails for the very handsome price of $99.95. My big question is, who's this aimed at?
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, if you want... Okay, if you're really into the card game, then yeah, you might want it because it's got some exclusive stuff and you get access to the digital version of the card
which
game
you'll
that
probably
you love,
be getting,
which you'll probably want to play anyway. But they pitch the decks as like starter decks as a way into the game, and $100 product does not intro to anything.
Well, we've just mentioned the new Age of Sigmar starter set, which is exactly the same price, really.
But then again, you get a load of stuff in that. You get a load of miniatures. And it's not split between two products.
Yeah, it's all for one game. And this is a physical game, a digital game. And what do you want to sell? What do you want to promote?
I was sort of assuming that the announcement of the digital game meant they were going to be tailing off the physical game. Because they've got a lot of properties now. And
they do.
Star Wars is obviously their biggest one. And they've just they've recently announced the end of Netrunner, and I was sort of imagining that they might be starting to wind up Lord of the Rings as well, but maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe they want to continue. It certainly seems like that if they're releasing physical product like this.
I think it is their kind of secret success in the background, just constantly bringing in, you know, sustainable income, really.
Yeah. I have no idea how successful it is, but it certainly has its following. I've never played it myself, but...
So I played it for a good few years. So I played four cycles of Lord of the Rings LCG. So it's a co-op card game. Essentially the forerunner to what Arkham Horror the card game is these days. Arkham took Lord of the Rings and really built on the system and made it a lot more accessible.
Well, two of the main designers are from the Lord of the Rings team.
Completely. And it's a really strong game. The digital game does look very different. I think that's really worth noting and really worth taking into account.
But also that we don't know, because no one really knows what it looks like. Yeah, I think they've been showing off a couple of cons, but I haven't seen it properly yet.
Yeah, it looks very heavily... I don't really want to say watered down, but I'm going to say watered down. Doesn't look as in-depth. Looks kind of a Hearthstone clone, but not two-player.
Yeah.
It will be two-player in the future, they've said. It's a co-op game. We'll see what happens. I'll definitely be picking it up and I can chat about it sometime in the future.
Cool. Yeah, so we are going to visit a corner of the studio this week. We're going to visit RPG Corner.
What's in this corner? Looks like RPG Corner. Books.
So there are a few little RPG announcements that are worth passing over. Over the Edge is coming back to Kickstarter later in the year from Atlas Games. This was a very well-regarded, really weird game. I've never played it myself, but I sort of got a sort of David Lynchian kind of world to it. All sorts of weird stuff can happen. And it was very well-regarded at the time for being very different to everything else that was out there at the time. So that's coming back to Kickstarter soon. I will almost definitely be backing that and picking up at least the PDF, just to have a read of that. Scum and Villainy pre-orders are now open for the physical book and the PDF if you missed it in the Blades in the Dark Kickstarter. This is a Forged in the Dark game, which means it uses the Blades in the Dark system, and it's a game of sort of Firefly-esque adventures, Millennium Falcon, that kind of stuff in space. Really looking forward to that. I think I have access to the PDF because I backed for All In, basically, on the Blades Kickstarter. So get a look at that soon. So Critical Role, which is one of Geek and Sundry's channels, where they do online D&D game that they stream worldwide, has proved so popular that Steamforge Games have decided to make miniatures of the characters in that game. This is a real example of how popular online streaming of Dungeons & Dragons and role-playing games has become recently, that they can run a Kickstarter of this size, and is currently sitting at some huge amount of money. And I would imagine even if you do miss Kickstarter, by the time this podcast goes out, they will probably open up a Pledge Manager where you can pledge later. I think they said something to that effect on Twitter earlier today. Finally, just today, there were some new sneak peeks of 4th edition Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, or WFRUP, coming out of Cubicle 7, showing off some of the ways they're changing how occupations, that kind of thing, work. There's been a couple other previews recently, so those are worth checking out, and the game will be out fairly soon. I think it's out later this year, around about the time of Gen Con. Really looking forward to that. I was a big fan of WFRUP in sort of second edition mode, And yeah, looking forward to diving back into that world again. This will be set in the old Warhammer world, not the Age of Sigmar world. Though there is an Age of Sigmar role-playing game coming as well from Cubicle 7, but they haven't really talked about that as much, and I don't know when that's coming. I think that's sometime next year. And that's all we have now for RPG Corner.
And back to the news. Jamie?
Well, keeping one foot in RPG Corner, I'll just keep my balance nicely. The ENI Awards, the Gen Con EN World RPG Awards, the nominations were announced in the last couple of days. Over 500 submitted products, 23 categories, 72 publishers, and we will have the winners announced on the 3rd of August this year. Leading the way are Starfinder from Paizo and Delta Green from, I believe that's Chaosium. Ian has completely converted me. For Product of the Year, Blades in the Dark is nominated. On the other hand, so is Star Trek Adventures.
Boom. What is up with that?
And all three of us have
also noticed it was under Best Rules as well, which
also from Best Rules. Yeah,
what is going on there?
I know definitely it would not win Best Layout Rulebook. Best layout of a rulebook because it's a hot mess.
Yeah. If you want to hear my opinions on Star Trek, you can find my review on the Giant Brain. It's not very favorable. But we are in the minority. A lot of people love it, so each their own.
A lot of people are wrong.
Yeah, there's a hell of a lot that's being covered. I mean, personally, it's great that there is such minutia, but I think 27 categories is far too many.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of mad. It's like, best monster adversary, best miniature product, best free game.
Those are two different things, apparently. And I get praise people for their work, and that's good. But some of these could be rolled into one.
Yeah, and it might benefit from that as well, like drawing attention to the real gems rather than just giving everyone a prize. You know what I mean? So yeah, another interesting little Kickstarter I've been following is the Binding of Isaac card game. I don't know if you guys have played the computer game, but essentially this is a weird sort of roguelike computer game, top-down, sort of elements of the original Zelda in there, moving in between dungeon rooms, killing things, but with a very weird art style and sensibility and weird philosophy behind it, where you're essentially this weird crying baby shooting weird monsters from your nightmares. And all sorts of stuff happens that I won't spoil her. But yeah, there's a card game up on Kickstarter right now. It's doing incredibly well.
Again, out of $50,000, it has raised $920,206. With 21 days to go, it is 1,840% funded.
Jamie is our stats guy. I think it's just an example of we're bound to see more of this kind of tie-in as the board game hobby grows, seeing indie computer games turned into board games and probably vice versa. So I think it's a cool thing to see. I'm not backing that one myself particularly, but yeah, it's an interesting product to see.
GameRight have announced Forbidden Sky. This is the latest installment, as we should say really now, into Matt Leacock's saga of Forbidden games, starting with Forbidden Island, moving on to Forbidden Desert. Now we're taking to the skies. This one has a twist. Matt Leacock came up with a compelling mechanism which warranted GameRight to throw aside the long-held rule of not publishing games with batteries. Forbidden Sky sees you build a circuit, complete a circuit to finally take off in your spaceship. It sees this very similar layout, similar setup structure to the previous Forbidden games, tiles and pawns on a table, constantly shifting around, race against the clock to take off from wherever it is you're trapped. Looks very interesting. What do you guys think?
I think as a board, I think it's looking slightly more malleable, less kind of structured as Forbidden Island or Forbidden Desert's like initial setup.
Yep.
The pictures that we're seeing, it looks like there's little kind of raised cylinders that kind of might provide some sort of electrical circuit. Connect them in a sort of. All we've got is kind of one image.
Yeah, we've only got one picture at the moment, and it's kind of vital to say we haven't actually got any kind of rules outlay or anything as to how the game really plays.
I mean, it looks really cool. Like, there's a cool rocket in the middle of it and everything. And I'm in. But yeah,
it's
I think
got a rocket, we're good to go.
It's keeping the Forbidden series, you know, of just having large large models for
set pieces.
You could argue,
yeah.
I know a couple of friends with kids who have really enjoyed some of the earlier games, playing them with their kids because they're understandable. It's good to see a company still innovating, still trying to come up with new things. I mean, we've had a lot of app integration over the last couple of years, and I don't see a particularly compelling reason to not include things like batteries or rechargeable things in games. Maybe we'll see more of that going forwards. Okay, guys, so I'm getting really excited about Tabletop Scotland that is later in the year. I'm involved myself. I'm helping run the playtest zone there. They just announced a huge amount of new exhibitors there as well. Our friends at the Unlucky Frog Gaming Podcast are now their official media partners. Congratulations to them. Really looking forward to seeing what they come up with and their stuff. They're running a Room 101 event, and they'll be recording seminars and doing all sorts of stuff throughout the con. So congrats to all the folks, Charlotte, Josh, and Ben at Unlucky Frog Gaming. And yeah, it's starting to shape up really, really well. I've spoken to David a couple of times. He's been on the blog, a meeting of minds, to chat about the con and that kind of thing. And it really seems to be starting to come together for them. And I'm really enthusiastic. I've read up a huge amount about it, and it's looking really, really good, don't you think?
Ian, you said you've read up a lot about it.
Ian, don't get too enthusiastic. Here we go again.
Hello?
Your name, please.
Ian McAllister.
Your specialist subject, Tabletop Scotland 2018. What are the dates of Tabletop Scotland 2018?
1st and 2nd September.
Correct. What is the name of the Scottish city that is holding the convention?
Perth.
Where in Perth is the convention being held?
The Juris Centre.
Correct. How many board and card game tournaments are being run over the event?
10.
Inc. 6. Which German board game publisher will be running the Family Zone, full of games for ages 4 and upwards?
Habba.
Correct. Name one of the two board game publishers and distributors which will be hosting demonstration zones.
Asmodee.
Correct.
Coiled Spring.
Correct. To the nearest 100, just over how many games will be in the games library, supplied by Dice Roll Cafe?
200 plus.
Correct. Name the hosts of at least one of the three seminars being run throughout the event.
Bez.
Correct. Other answers were Unlucky Frog or Meeples Like Us. What is the name of the board game designer, reviewer, and podcast host will be assisting with the playtest area, where people can help test new games before they are released or bring a game of their design and get feedback?
Ian Harry McAllister.
Correct. What is the website... I've started, so I'll finish. What is the website where anyone interested can get more information, including tickets?
Tabletopscotland.co.uk.
Correct. Ian McAllister, at the end of that, you have 9 points.
Oh, jeez. I'm next.
Yeah, you are.
When's it going to happen? Who knows?
The chair's coming for you. Well, okay, so that happened again. That keeps happening. Well, I'll have to watch out for that, Sam. Well, because I've had one and Jamie's had one, so...
I'm scared.
Yeah,
I'm scared.
It's you next. But for now, let's go to the comforting chairs of Brainstorm. So, yeah, I've had this sort of topic in my head for a little while now. What I'd like to talk about on this week's Brainstorm is... we all know that Board Game Geek is a massive board gaming website. It's sort of the go-to resource for a lot of board gamers, including ourselves. I post reviews there when I can. And, yeah, it is the central mecca for all of board gaming, effectively. But is the Board Game Geek... What I want to discuss today is Board Game Geek's unassailable position as the go-to board game website, is that good for the growth of the hobby? What do you think, guys?
It's good to have a centralized place. It's the combined, and you know, it's a combined forum, ratings, question and answer, all in one.
But that's why I say it's a problem, Board Game Geek. It's too much. That front page of that website is an abomination.
I think that's a completely different thing. I think, for your point, completely. It started in what, 2000, Board Game Geek? It looks like it's still from 2000. It needs to clean up its. At least I use it primarily just for checking out games, and maybe if I've got a question about a game I'm playing, I don't go on the forums and for that, because I honestly don't understand how.
Yeah, I mean, I do a bit. I mean, I have to post reviews there and that kind of thing. If you're any kind of content producer, you sort of have to engage with Board Game Geek. and posting reviews there is, it's just not a terribly pleasant experience. Like, getting that actual, just using the content creator is not great. I've learned to do it, but it is not intuitive by any means. I've had to look stuff up several times. In order to get the podcast on there, I had to look up how to do that and had to actually ask a couple of other podcasts where to do it and how, because I just couldn't find it.
I think talking about like the look and the layout and the style of it is really important, and I do agree that it should be maybe more accessible. Going there as a person new to the hobby, as kind of the go-to place for gaming on the internet, yeah, fair enough, I do agree is a bit of an overwhelming experience.
Yeah.
I still have trouble kind of working out what everything means, all the numbers and all the stats a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know, what rating system is this using? There's a lot of confusion there. But even saying that, like, I've just gone to the front page of Reddit, and Reddit isn't really a website I use, but, you know, it's a forum site similar to BGG, and that's quite confusing. I collect records, and the main website for that would be Discogs, where you can catalogue your collection.
Yeah.
It's BGG, but for records. And again, that looks completely outdated and old. But I suppose, are these just layouts that work for what they are? I take it they're easy to code and it doesn't take much maintenance.
I think the problem with BGG is not... Yeah, there's layout problems and there's usability problems, absolutely. And that's sort of where we started this conversation. But it's not the main problem. The main problem is that it is... If you want your game to be really successful, that is the website you have to engage with. There are very few other ways.
I agree.
Some board games have got around that, like Escape the Dark Castle had a really successful set in Kickstarter recently, and it's reasonably well regarded on Board Game Geek, but a lot of like negative reviews from people like Tom Vassell and stuff like that exist on Board Game Geek to sort of bring it down a bit. And because people go to Board Game Geek for all their information, getting a negative review from a big voice like Dice Tower or Shubman Sedan or something like that, it's going to reflect. And there is nowhere else to really go. Like I think the point I'm trying to drive at is, like, if you had a new person you're teaching a game to and they were interested in finding out more about the hobby, would you send them to Board Game Geek? Because I know I wouldn't.
No.
Yeah. But where would you send them? So I think there are a lot of great websites out there that explain board games in a really interesting, friendly way. Like Shop and Sit Down would be my go-to. Their videos are great.
I think it's a sound choice, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know everyone likes their style, but I really like their humorous style. And
I think
I've, like,
they're really
shown
engaging.
I've shown a couple of their videos to Kath, who's not my wife, who's not a board gamer, but she's really liked those videos.
I'll watch one of their videos even if I'm not bothered at all about the game they're talking about. Just because of the way they do present things is just interesting and entertaining, really, no matter if I think the game's rubbish or boring or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think it's also really vital to make the point that it's only a certain type of gamer that actually uses BGG.
Yeah,
That is hardcore gamers who want to catalogue their collection, who want to comment on games, who want to go online and rate games. And actually, this isn't a casual place. This is a hardcore gamers forum.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, and that's one of my problems with it. As the hobby grows, we're bringing in people who don't necessarily want to spend 3-4 hours playing a game. They want shorter game experiences. They want to be shown, like, if you like this, maybe you like this. They want that kind of information. And I feel like Board Game Geek sort of runs roughshod over that kind of opinion.
I am, definitely. I think everyone might be guilty of kind of looking at a game if they're in a shop and go, that's not bad. I just want to check the BGG stats and see how it does and check the average and see what its number is. As you said, he's a particular type of gamer that's going to come to it. And that's not so bad. I think people who are proud of their collection, that's fantastic. But you can just see from its inception, you can see the games that have been the highest, the coveted number one spot, the coveted, couple. It's notable what kind of game. These are a lot heavier games that require much more time input. And at the same time, also quite a buy-in.
They're heavy, in-depth strategy games, which I think perfectly shows the demographic of this website.
Because BGG is such an unassailable force in terms of board game websites, I think people focus too much on it. I think companies focus too much on it. And I'd really like to see that website burned down to the ground and built up again from scratch. I think it should still exist. I just think it needs to present...
It's got a use, but I think, as you say, it's kind of that cataloguing information base.
Yeah, it's a wiki first and foremost, and that's how it looks. And it'd be really good to see it sort of like present a friendlier face at some point, a more accessible face. I know they've tried a couple of times and it's been resisted strongly by the community.
I think it needs to change. It needs to change and move on to accept a new, as I say, a new generation, just more people who are more willing to engage in the community at a deeper level.
But again, is that just reflecting the core demographic of that website? And actually, you've got other websites, Shut Them Sit Down, we mentioned, that are doing things differently that a different demographic are responding well to.
So yeah, I think what we're basically saying about BGG is that we think it does have a place going forward as a database, as a effectively a board game wiki. However, it should not be your first point or port of call if you're a new gamer to the hobby. You should go to sites like sort of like something like Shop Sent Down, something find reviewers you like my friend Rory Summers, who runs Board Means, find people you like whose opinions reflect your taste in board games, and follow them, share their work, have a look at their stuff, and use that as your entry into the hobby. That's the way you should go. But yeah, so yeah, it's there, it's useful for a purpose, but it definitely shouldn't be your first port of call as a new person to the hobby. And yeah, use with caution, I think is what we're saying.
And finally, on Brainwaves today, we're going to be looking at a very interesting Kickstarter. This is the Edible Games Cookbook. Play with your food. It's very simply, as it says, a cookbook, but you're making real playable board games. Also very interesting to me, at least, I suppose, is eating is in the mechanics of the games. which is just fantastic.
Nom.
It's cool. It's out of left field. It's good.
The designer, Jen Sandercock, is a professional board game designer and a amateur baker. And this is the culmination of her combining two of her great passions.
And it also says that every recipe offers store-bought options, so you don't even need to do cooking. If you don't want to cook, but you still want to play with your food, literally, you can go to the store and buy the ingredients, which is kind of cool.
Amazing. It's,
I like that.
At the time of recording, it's got 2 weeks left to go. It's just over $56,000 raised out of an $80,000 goal.
So a little bit to go, but it could get there easily.
Absolutely.
Yeah, give it a pledge, have a look.
And if
and
you
see
pledge,
what you think.
If you've got the money and you pledge $3,500 or more, the author will come to your house and bring three freshly baked edible games of your choosing for you and a dozen of your friends and family. only available in the USA, Canada, and Australia. If you live elsewhere, get in touch.
USA, Canada, and Australia?
Yes, that's what I thought as well.
If you can travel between those, surely you can travel anywhere.
That is some disparate destinations there. I think that's about all we have time for on this episode of Brainwave, so thank you so much for listening. If you like what you've listened to, then the best way to help us out, as usual, is to share the podcast wherever you can. Drop us a review and rating on iTunes. We really appreciate that, and it really does help a huge amount. If you want to follow ourselves on social media, you can do so. We are on Twitter as @TheGiantBrain, Instagram, GiantBrainUK. You can find us on Facebook as The Giant Brain. Our website is thegiantbrain.co.uk. And you can email us at giantbrainuk@gmail.com. And please do get in touch. Let us know what you think about things we talk about and brainstorm news articles this week. And if you have some exclusive news articles, please drop us a line and we will feature them in a future podcast. You can also throw us a dollar or two on Patreon. Links to that are on the Giant Brain website and will be in the show notes. You can find links to everything we've discussed tonight in our show notes that will be up with the podcast. Thank you so much.